let's go right into what we're going to be looking at. As far as the last part of chapter 22, we're going to see the results of Paul's testimony that he had shared with the crowd and what happened with that. We're going to see the reaction of the mob and how they were so obsessed with not accepting God's will. They were in a point where they wanted to destroy Paul or kill him. We're going to see how the commander of this of the army wanted to examine Paul. And we're going to see how Paul's claim to his legal rights. And then we're going to see in the last part of chapter 22 how the commander reacted to what Paul had shared with him. And then in the 23rd chapter, Paul's going to be in front of the Sanhedrin. It's going to be Paul's testimony before the high priest and the court. Paul had lived before God with a good and clear conscience. Paul's respect for God's appointed authority. Paul's strategy to divide the council. And it's pretty interesting when you read those five verses, we see how Paul used the two groups that were made up of the council, the Sanhedrin, the Sadducees and Pharisees. The Lord's encouragement to Paul. In the second part of chapter 23, we're going to see the conspiracy to kill Paul by some men. The high priests were involved. The elders were involved. We also are going to see how God used a young man to expose the conspiracy. And he shared that information with not only Paul, but the Roman soldiers. And God used the justice of men to achieve his purpose. The soldiers are going to play an integral part of protecting Paul. Claudius Lysias had written a letter to Governor Felix, and we're going to see how the soldiers delivered the letter and brought Paul to Governor Felix. And then we're going to see how Governor Felix's decision concerning Paul. So that's what's on our agenda this morning. So with that, we're going to back up a little bit and look at in chapter 22, why was the mob enraged at Paul? And who would like to read verses 22 and 23, please?
They listened to him up to this statement, and then they raised their voice that away with such a fellow here should not be allowed to live. And so as they were crying out and throwing off the cloak and tossing dust in the air.
So Ron, how did this affect the mob, Paul's speech?
They were fine up to a point.
Mm-hmm.
But when Paul started talking about his conversion, and what happened to him, and he was told to go to the Gentiles, they threw a hissy fit.
Exactly. They didn't want any part of sharing this. In fact, they wanted the old way to stay. And when you read verse 23, they were crying out and throwing off their cloaks and tossing dust into the air. They were enraged to do something. That was to kill Paul. So what method did the commander use? What method did the commander want to use to interrogate Paul? And we find that in verse 24. And can I get a volunteer to read that, please?
The commander ordered him to be brought into the barracks, stating that he should be examined by clergy so that he might find out the reason why they were shouting against him.
Exactly. In fact, when I did some research on this scourging of the individual, it's like someone takes a leather strap and puts bone and nails, and it's going to rip the individual's flesh away from him. So they wanted to torture Paul to find out what's going on with this guy. Why is the crowd so obsessed with him talking about this Jesus? So what did Paul relate to the commander about about who he was? And can I get someone to read verses 25 through 28, please?
And they stretched him out with palms. Paul said to the centurion who was standing by, "Is it lawful for you to scourge a man who is a Roman and uncondemned?" When the centurion heard this, he went to the commander and told him, saying, "What are you about to do? This man is a Roman." The commander came and said to him, "Tell me, are you a Roman?" And he said, "Yes." The commander answered, "I acquired this citizenship with a large sum of money," and Paul said, "But I was actually born a citizen."
Exactly. So, in your words, Carol, what was he thinking about, Paul, when he said this?
Paul knew he could put a stop to this if anybody listened, and he did. And then in the end, when the commander came and wanted to say, "Well, you just bought it. I bought mine, you know." And Paul goes, "Oh, no. I'm the real."
And just remember back last week when we studied and Paul was confronted about where he was from. And he says, "I'm Paul of Tarsus from Cilicia." He didn't mention he was a Roman citizen, but here he does. And it comes into play. And he, as Carol had indicated, it wasn't that he bought it. He was born into it. And this must have frightened the soldiers. Question, then the last part of this chapter, how did the Romans react to this information? And what did the commander do? We see in verse 29 and 30, "Therefore, those who were about to examine him immediately let him go. And the commander also was afraid. When he found out that he was a Roman, and because he had put him in chains. But on the next day, wishing to know for certain why he had been accused by the Jews, he released him and ordered the chief priests and all the council to assemble and brought Paul down and set him before him." So the commander was afraid to hear that he was a Roman citizen, and he jailed him for no reason. He was going to torture him. But the commander, what he did was he released him, and he ordered the chief priests and all the council to assemble. I didn't know that the commander had that type of authority to make the council come together. But anyway, he wanted to get down to the root cause of what happened. Dean.
Yeah, it's really surprising. You mentioned that when Paul made his defense, he didn't say that he was a Roman citizen.
Mm-hmm.
That would have enraged the council more than anything else. Council's made up of Pharisees and Sadducees. And while the Sadducees wanted to collaborate with the Romans, the Pharisees were absolutely opposed to collaborating with the Romans. So there was this racism that sort of engendered all of this, but there was racism even among the Jews toward the Jews. The Pharisees did not like the Sadducees. They couldn't stand the Sadducees. And then you had, on top of that, the Zealots, who wanted to, the Pharisees wanted to separate themselves and not have anything to do with the Romans. The Sadducees wanted to collaborate with the Romans, and the Zealots wanted to kill the Romans.
Yeah. It's real. It's a real interesting saga when you look at what played out. And when you look at the history as far as where the Sadducees and Pharisees came in, they weren't back in the day of Moses. They came in about 2nd, 3rd century BC. And they were, according to them, the elite. They wanted to keep God's law pure, but yet they didn't. They didn't follow the law. Very good comment. So that finishes our look at chapter 22. And we're going to start right now looking at chapter 23. Paul just gave his defense before the mob, and they were enraged. And now he's going to have an opportunity, if you will, to be in front of the council. He's going to share his thoughts with the high priest, the Sanhedrin, which consists of Sadducees and Pharisees. With that, what did Paul say about his life before the council? If we look at verse 1, can I get a volunteer for that one, please?
Paul, looking intently at the council, said, "Brethren, I have lived my life with a perfectly good conscience before God up until this day."
Exactly. So Ron, he said he lived his life with a perfectly good conscience. What does that mean?
Well, everything he thought he was doing, even up until this time, even though back before he was converted, he was doing everything he thought was right before God's sight. So he's in good conscience. Everything he's done through his whole life has been before God.
Exactly. He was very zealous to put God first. And now he has, again, an opportunity to make a defense before the council. We know that Jesus was brought before the council. We can read about that in the Mark chapter 14, verses 53 to 65. And then again, Peter and John in Acts chapter 4, 5 through 22, they were brought before the council. And also the apostles, when they were in prison, they went before the Sanhedrin, the council. And we see that now Paul is before the council. And they heard 5 times about Jesus' glory, Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection through the apostles. And yet they still didn't put it together. They still didn't go back through scripture to learn about Jesus the Messiah.
Lenny, I find it really interesting that the council had decided that they were going to kill Jesus all the way back in John.
Mm-hmm.
John the 11th chapter, after he raised Lazarus. Then there's this meeting of the council, and they said, we're going to have to put this guy to death. And not just Jesus, they were going to kill Lazarus too.
Exactly.
This was a kangaroo. And it was, there was no way that they were going to absolve Paul of the charges that had been brought against him. They undoubtedly knew that the charges were trumped up charges, but they were going to kill him.
Exactly. And that's what happened to Jesus. When we look back in the gospel record, we could see how those people on the council, the high priests, Sadducees and Pharisees, they want no part of the way. And they want to put it down because it's going to disrupt what they were used to. Their power, their prestige, and everything else. So what order did Ananias give, and how did Paul respond to the high priest's illegal command? And can I get someone to read verses 2 through 5, please?
High priest Ananias commanded those standing beside him to strike him on the mouth. And Paul said to him, God is going to strike you, you whitewashed Paul. Not sit to try me according to the law. Do you sit to try me according to the law and in violation of the law order to be struck? But the bystander said, you revealed God's high priest? And Paul said, I was not aware, brethren, that he was a high priest, for it is written, you shall not speak evil of the priest.
So, Kim, in your mind, what happened here?
Well, because he was a Roman citizen, he was being mistreated.
He was.
And he basically called him out for being hypocrites. And whitewashed wall would be metaphor for being a hypocrite.
Mm-hmm.
He looked good on the exterior, but on the inside, the thing about tombs, you know, nice and clean and pretty on the outside, on the inside, dead man's bones. And so, he's basically saying, you're doing this all for exterior show. You're doing this just for show. And in reality, you're the ones who are breaking the law. And so, you know, then they called him down for chastising the high priest. And, you know, he said he wasn't aware that he was a high priest. And he said, I respect the law. You should not speak to you. So had I known, I wouldn't have spoken. Nobody would have said that, but. You people are breaking the law here, and you're doing this just for show.
Exactly. In fact, when you look at Paul, he was upset. He was angry. Here's this person telling him and ordering the people that were standing by him to strike him in the mouth without even looking at the Old Testament law. What right did this individual have to do that? So he was upset. And he responded that way. However, if you look at what he quoted Exodus verses 22, verse 28. I was not aware, brethren, that this was a high priest. For it is written, you shall not speak of evil of a ruler of your people. Paul knew the law, and he knew how to respond. And he apologized for it. He was very humble. When you look at this particular statement, even though he was human like you and I, he got angry. But yet he looked and said, look, I am going to abide by the Old Testament law. We remember when Paul was preaching throughout his journeys, he didn't put other religions down like the Jewish religion. He didn't put the way people worship idols. He spoke the truth. He spoke about the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ Jesus. And that's the only means that the individual has for salvation. So how did Paul divide his enemies on the council? Can I get someone to read verses 6 through 9, please?
But for saving that one group, who are Sadducees and the other Pharisees, Paul began crying out in the council, "Brethren, I'm a Pharisee, son of Pharisees. I'm on trial for the hope and resurrection of the dead." As he said this, there occurred a discussion between the Pharisees and Sadducees, and the assembly was divided. For the Sadducees say there is no resurrection, nor an angel, nor a spirit, but the Pharisees acknowledge them all. And there occurred a great uproar, and some of the scribes of the Pharisaic party stood up and began to argue, but he exceeded, saying, "We find nothing wrong with this, both a spirit or an angel has spoken."
Thank you, Linda. So we see that Paul uses the different groups to split them up. And as Linda had indicated in her reading, that the Sadducees didn't believe in the resurrection. They didn't believe in angels. They didn't even believe in the spirit. But the Pharisees did. They believed in all of them. And Paul said to the council, "I'm not here on trial because of the way I preached the word or the actions that I did, that some claim that I brought, I desecrated the temple by bringing in a Gentile. I'm on trial here for the hope and resurrection of the dead." And that stirred put a wedge between the Sadducees and the Pharisees. All of a sudden now, half of the council, the Pharisees, are on Paul's side. And the other half still wants him dead. Still wants this way destroyed. Just as today in this world, we as Christians have to be on our guard to stand firm in our faith, and even when people are putting down our faith, and stand firm for Jesus. That's our job. And I know it's hard at times, but yet we as Christians should be sharpening our skills, studying the Bible, applying the Bible to our lives, meditating on God's word, asking God for help when we meet these individuals. In verse 10, and a great dissension was developing, and the commander was afraid Paul would be torn to pieces by them and ordered the troops to go down and take him away from them by force and bring him into the barracks. So again, the Roman soldiers were there to assist Paul so that he wouldn't die. Which brings us, what did the Lord say to Paul? Now here's Paul who went through one trial with those individuals, were a mob, and now he's before the council going through the same gyrations of people wanting him dead. He was at a low point. He was really by himself. So what did the Lord say to him? Faye, I see you're ready.
But on the night immediately following, the Lord stood at his side and said, "Take courage, for as you have solemnly witnessed that God has crucified, so you must be witnessed at Rome."
So what were the three things that Jesus told him?
To take courage, which is used a lot in your
And
he's already testified at Jerusalem
Exactly. He already witnessed to Jesus in Jerusalem. And the third point that Jesus makes to him, Paul will be a witness in Rome. So Paul was going to have the opportunity to go to Rome. Maybe not the way he wanted to go, but he went to Rome as a prisoner. But yet still was witnessing for Jesus. Yes, Carol.
Seems to me that the Holy Spirit made sure the word witness was in there. It's not that he just went and he talked.
Mm-hmm.
We've got in this day and age so many people who say things that sound like they're great, but they aren't. And they want everybody to believe that they're testifying, that they're witness, you know, that believe them. But he's a witness, so he's corroborating what he saw. It's not just he's talking about something.
Exactly. He's testifying about Jesus the Christ, Adin.
Yeah, I think Faye makes a really good point. You see this phrase, take courage, a lot. And I'm sure that for Paul, this would have been a fairly easy thing to do. He's already stood up for God. And he's been willing to do everything that God wanted him to do. So this is pretty easy for him. But then I think about the use in the Old Testament. Remember when the people were coming into the land and they took Jericho and there was a problem because they didn't destroy everything, but Achan took some of the plunder and hid it in his tent.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went out to fight against Ai, and they got whipped. So they come back, and they go through this examination to find out who it was that had sinned. It was Achan. And then when Joshua sends them out a second time to take Ai, he says, take courage. That would have been really hard for them to do because they failed so miserably. Paul doesn't have that problem. He just needs the reassurance that God is going to be there.
Exactly. He needs to be encouraged. And Jesus, at this particular point in Paul's life, appeared to him and said, hey, take courage. You are a witness for me in Jerusalem. And also now you are going to be a witness for me in Rome. Very good. Kim.
After she put it in a success in Ephesus, and he had healed a lot of people and he had done a lot of things in chapter 19 that we studied, he said in verse 21, after all this had happened, Paul decided to go to Jerusalem. Passing through Macedonia and Achaia, and after I have been there, he said, I must visit Rome also.
Mm-hmm.
And so here, after going through this time, and he's probably pretty down at this point, God is reinforcing to him, the Lord comes to him and reinforces to him, you know what, Paul, you decided correctly, you are on the right path, and I'm going to be there for you. I think that's pretty cool because the scriptures clearly say that he decided to do this.
Exactly.
But he was on a path and God is supporting his path, his decision.
And just remember when he was back in the time he was in Macedonia, in Arcadia, he was making a collection for the needy saints in Jerusalem. And he had something driving him. That is to help his brethren out in Jerusalem. So let's go on. Describe the Jews' conspiracy against Paul. And can I get someone to read verses 12 through 15, please?
Saying that they would either eat and drink or they had killed Paul. There were more than 40 before his book. They came to the priest and told him that he had found himself at the college of the state. Now, therefore, he was not the first man of the family, but so he was going to return to the state and was the role of his kids. And we, well, our part of it is.
Thank you, Eileen. So we see in this particular plot that they formed a conspiracy. And there was about 40 people that said, we're not going to eat or drink until we kill Paul. So they conjured up this plan with the assistant, with the chief priest and the elders and say, hey, go to the Romans and say, we want this fellow back, Paul, so that we could further examine him and determine by our law what's right. So they plotted to kill him on the way back. And they weren't going to eat or drink. They took an oath. They said, we want this individual dead. End of story. So what happened? Who informed Paul about the plot against him? And can I get someone to read the next two verses, 16 and 17, please?
But a friend of Paul's sister heard of their ambush, and he came and entered Barak's, old Paul. Paul called one of the centurions and said, lead this young man to the commander, for he has something to report.
Thank you, Jane. So Paul's nephew came to his aid. And when we think about that, we don't know how he heard about the conspiracy. We don't know how he knew what was happening, but yet he heard about it. And he showed some fortitude by going forth and warning Paul. And if you look at this particular verse, little is known about Paul's family. The present passage is the sole mention of his sister and her son. And if you remember that Paul's family moved to Jerusalem from Tarsus so that he could learn under Gamaliel the law. So his whole family was there. And this is all we know about his family. So what did the informant, the nephew, share with the commander about, and how did the commander respond to him? Can I get someone to read verses 18 through 22, please?
So he took him and led him to the commander and said, Paul, the prisoner, called me to him and asked me to lead this young man to you since he has something to tell you. Commander took him by the hand and, stepping aside, began to inquire of him privately, what is it that you have to report to me? And he said, the Jews have agreed to ask you to bring Paul down tomorrow to the council, as though they were going to inquire somewhat more thoroughly about him. So do not listen to them, for more than 40 of them lie in wait for him, who have bound themselves under a curse not to eat or drink until they slay him. And now they are ready and waiting for the promise from you. So the commander let the young man go, instructing him, tell no one that you have notified me of these things.
Thank you, Carol. An interesting point when you read verse 17, and tie it with 18 through 22. The young man didn't tell the centurion about the plan. He wanted to go to the commander. And when you look at Paul, who was in prison, he had that type of clout to approach a centurion and say, hey, this young man has something to say to the commander. Can you take him to him? And he did. Now, if it was in our prison system today, that probably wouldn't have happened. But Paul, being the type of person he was, he had that type of clout. And when you look at the young man, he risked a lot to go to approach the Romans. In fact, when you look at this young man's character, he was caring. He cared for his Uncle Paul, and he wanted to make sure that they wouldn't hurt him. He also was brave and courageous by going to the Romans and saying, hey, there's a plot against Paul. We need to do something about it. We don't know how old this individual was. All we know is he was a young man. Could have been a teenager. Could have been in his early 20s. We don't know. He was very young. And he was wise. He approached the commander and told them about the plot. And he wanted the commander to do something about it. And at the end of verse 22, the child was very trustworthy. What did the commander tell him? Don't say anything to anybody. He trusted him that he was going to keep it himself so he wouldn't tip off these individuals. He cared for his uncle and he cared for what happened. And now we see, what orders did the commander give to get Paul away from danger? Can I get someone to read verses 23 and 24, please?
And he called to the centurion and said, get ready 200 soldiers with 70 horsemen, 200 spearmen, to go as far as Caesarea at the third hour of the night. Also provide mounts for Paul to ride and bring him safely to Felix the governor.
So, Sherry, how did the commander react?
Well, he took it seriously.
Exactly.
He made sure that any attack that was coming, they would be ready.
He had 70 horsemen and 200 soldiers who were spearmen. That's a lot of people to protect Paul against this plot. And he also provided Paul a mount so that he could ride and get away from it. Exactly. So why did Claudius Lysias send the letter to Governor Felix? And can I get someone to read verses 25 through 30?
He wrote a letter as follows. Claudius Lysias to His Excellency Governor Felix, greetings. This man was seized by the Jews and they were about to kill him, but I came with my troops and rescued him, for I had learned that he is a Roman citizen. I wanted to know why they were accusing him, so I brought him to their Sanhedrin. I found out that the accusations had to do with questions about their law, but there was no charge against him that deserved death or imprisonment. But I was informed of a plot to be carried out against this man. I sent him to you at once. I also ordered his accusers to present to you their case against
him. Thank you very much, Kim. So we see that Claudius Lysias, who is the name of the commander, found Paul to be accused of questions about the Jewish law. And there was no accusation deserving of death or imprisonment. So he referred to Paul to a higher court. He learned about the plot to kill Paul, and that's true. And Claudius Lysias sent Paul to the governor and instructed his accusers to bring charges against him before Governor Felix. If we will go back to the scene with the mob, who stirred up the crowd? Who do we remember stirred up the crowd up against Paul? They were Jews from where? From Asia. In fact, they plagued Paul's journeys throughout his missionary journeys, from the first, second, and third journeys. They followed Paul, these false teachers. They weren't included, it's just the council. So we read, so the soldiers, in accordance with their orders, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. But the next day, leaving the horsemen and going on with him, they returned to the barracks. So once they got Paul out of trouble, half of them went home. And when these had come to Caesarea and delivered the letter to the governor, they also presented Paul before him. So if we look at this particular map, here's where they were at in Jerusalem, and they were going to go up to Caesarea. That's about 60 miles. So they couldn't have made it in one day. So they journeyed to Antipatris and Antipatris. They stayed overnight here. And the next day they went to Caesarea. And that's where the seat of the governor was. And he was responsible for that whole region to dish out the law. So after Felix learned that Paul was from Caesarea, what did the governor determine to do? Did I miss? No, that's right. What did the governor determine to do? Can I get someone to read verses 34 and 35, please?
He said, I will give you a hearing with your accusers when your accusers arrive, giving orders for him to be executed.
Thank you. So he wanted to know where Paul was from. And in this, Governor Felix was responsible for the people in Cilicia and also in Judah. So he could hear Paul's case. And before he was going to hear Paul's case, he wanted his accusers to come forward. So they had to send a message back to Jerusalem and say, hey, you guys who accused Paul, get up here so I could hear your claim and make my determination of whether or not Paul should be kept in prison or released. So as a Christian, how can you protect the rights of the poor and the weak? Just think about that. You are a Christian, a child of God. How could you protect the rights of the poor and the weak?
I guess I'm assuming that we would consider Paul weak here in that he was falsely accused. So when we see justice is not served and someone's being oppressed, unfairly oppressed, I guess,
right.
I suggest I'm here, then we should come to their defense. We should try to figure out a way to right that wrong if we can, to influence that in some way.
Exactly. Just think about verse 11. When Jesus appeared to Paul, he told him to take courage and also informed him that, hey, look, you already did your job. You witnessed before those in Jerusalem, but yet your job is not complete. You're going to be a witness for me in Rome. So as Tim said, to encourage and support those who are wrongfully accused. We as Christians should stand up for the truth. We should put ourselves out on a limb. God's going to be with us. God's going to take care of us. Because we put him first in our lives. Anybody else want to take a stab at this? It's a think question. Faye and then Dean.
Sometimes when somebody is wrongfully accused, there's a family.
Mm-hmm.
So a practical thing would be to help that family. Because they need encouragement and support also. It wouldn't just be the person. I mean, you have to think about their sphere.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Indeed.
Yeah, I was thinking about old sister's son and what he did when he knew that Paul was being accused. I find it interesting that he went and told Paul about the plot and then it kind of left it up to Paul how Paul wanted him to proceed. Sometimes we decide that we're going to do something to help someone, but it's not that we're listening to what the oppressed person is telling us. We think we have to support them our way instead of listening to what they want to.
Exactly. We have to listen to them and see what their needs are. See how we could supplement them in their time of need. I also put down we should learn to be steadfast in your faith. We look at examples, Peter, Stephen, and Paul. Although they were falsely accused, they are examples of being steadfast. Lessons we can extract from history, from the book of Acts. Kim.
Sorry, I have one
comment. Sure.
Intervene on this behalf. As a young man,
mm-hmm.
he probably had very little social standing. Then it was the commander community. And then it was the governor himself who said, you know what, let's listen to your accusers. Let's give you a right trial. And so you could be all the way from the governor down to the lowliest person. You don't have to be a person that's in a position of authority in order to intervene.
Exactly. You could help. And that's where Christians are. We're solid in our faith and we should support others. Carol?
That's something that Jesus made me think of when the Israelites were in the wilderness when they went into Canaan. One of the things that they got in trouble with was they didn't go to God and ask what he wanted before they did something. They just went off on their own. And that young boy went to the authority, his uncle, but he would have been the authority that he would have been responsible for reporting it to, with no thought of getting it out in the news and spreading the thing and trying to do something himself. He went there and because he knew Paul would know what to do.
Sure.
I'm sure Paul prayed about it before he
And that's very true. And that's a very good point. We're out of time. We'll take a break right here. And next week's lesson sheets will be on the back podium. Please pick one up.